All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Good morning, everybody. It's an early one here, Friday morning. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you all had a nice night, got some rest. It was a very exciting night. But before we get into things, I want to say Bet365. This episode is brought to you by them. Bet365, they are the proud partner. Dropping the gloves. I'm happy they're joining us on the show. It's a beautiful partnership. You could open an account today with Bet365 and get a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA when you sign up to give us a little bump. Bet365, they're the biggest and best in the business. They do it right. It's an amazing, amazing setup they have there. So if you're betting, just slide on over to Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Do us a favor and do yourself a favor. Now we got to get into this, because Tim, I tell you what, everybody, I've known Tim a long time. Years and years and years. I've seen him worked up. I've seen him go through downtimes, you know, a little Philly breaks his heart. He's upset. You know, someone ticks him off. He gets angry, sad, angry, all the emotions. I've never seen him like this. I don't know how to describe it. He's smiling like a psychopath right now. He is just worked up. So I'm just going to let Tim have the floor, because he's champing at the bit, I've heard. So go ahead, Tim, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. I'm pissed off. Games 3 and 4, you win both in Toronto. After losing game 2 at home, Matthews scores. You think all the momentum's going back the other way.
Slow down, Tim.
A statement. You win games 3 and 4 in Toronto. They have a chance to close it out at home. Now, at this point in the series, everything's going Boston's way. We're flying high. Toronto's got the offseason checklist going. We're firing the coach. We need to find a goalie. We're trading Marner. The city's crumbling. Boston's still the big brother. You have a chance on Tuesday night to close it out at home in front of a home crowd. You were sloppy. The effort wasn't there. One goal in the game, not good enough. The only reason why it was a close game is because Swayman kept you in. It was flat out embarrassing. For the next 2 days, the coach is pissed. Monty is pissed, and he says as much in the press. McAvoy and Marchand, that's your leadership core. They're going off about how embarrassed they were. They promised to bounce back. Not good enough. They're going to respond. And this is really important, because we all know what happened last year. Those thoughts start creeping in. Here we go again. Another 3-1 series lead to probably an inferior team. Not again. You know, in game 6, you need to respond. You have to respond. And this is your effort. One shot on goal in the first period. It's pathetic. I'm going to give some credit to Toronto. They played a tight game defensively. There was just no room to maneuver, no ice. It was impossible to get any sustained offense going. They played very, very well. And Bruins played pretty well defensively too. Obviously, Wall was outstanding. But now you're in a position where everything is on the line on Saturday night. And by the way, I don't mean this series or this season or this playoff run, because even if you win Saturday, you might get swept by Florida. And that's okay, because you're not that team. But you absolutely can't lose this game. I think legacies are on the line. Reputations are on the line. Jobs are on the line.
Lives are on the line.
Who are you as players? Monty, who are you as a coach? All of you. Who are you as an organization? Ooh. Because if you lose on Saturday night, you become the first team in any sport that blows a 3-1 series lead in consecutive seasons. you become that team that loses to Toronto in the playoffs for the first time in 59 years. And you become the team that cements this era in Bruins hockey, not only as underperformers, but choke artists. When we lost game 7 in Florida last year, I said on this show, unprecedented, you know, loss after historic regular season. I said the Leafs are no longer the butt of the joke in the league because they won and you lost. And I got some criticism for that. Here we are again. If we lose, you are the biggest joke in the league. You need your best players to step up. I'm looking at you, Pastrnak. You need McAvoy. Marchand has been okay, but it's been a while since he took over a game. I'm almost speechless, and I got so many messages last night. John, I'm fired up. I'm very upset. Can you just take the mic? I need a minute.
I'm not talking you off the ledge. You have a right to be here. The Bruins played terrible, absolutely atrocious last night. I can't wrap my head around how bad it was. You nailed it on the head. This is a huge game. And they show up flat. Shots were 12-1 after the first period. And mind you, that one shot by the Bruins was a half-hearted, shorthanded attempt by Jake DeBrusk from the top of the circles. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. The only reason they are in this series as a whole is Jeremy Swayman. He's been lights out. He was fantastic last night. He's played every game he's been in. He's been the best player on the ice, and he proved it again last night. Maybe it was a mistake to throw Omark in game 2. Maybe they should have rolled with Swayman and swept them in 4, but all that aside, what do we do for game 7? Because there were mistakes in game 6, but I think the biggest thing was just the effort level. The Bruins got outcompeted by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that's strange to say. And in my eyes, the Leafs were blocking shots. Like, the shot attempts were pretty even. The Bruins were throwing pucks at the net. Did you watch Jake McCabe, Ilya Lyubushkin, Morgan Rielly, all these guys, top to bottom? They were diving in front of pucks. They were blocking shots. Just when you think the Bruins had a grade-A chance, Pasta gets in the slot, never gets its way through the wall. It's a two-on-one. The puck gets deflected or blocked. It's an amazing. Carlo has an empty net, wide-open net, gets blocked by Domi, and then McCabe, a ricochet shot. It was quite the effort by the Toronto Maple Leafs. I have to, you know, give them some props because I didn't think they had it in them. They're playing fantastic. And you know what's funny? Who's leading the charge? It's Max Domi.
He's playing so well.
He's playing lights out. That kid is all over the ice. He's a tenacious forechecker. He's getting back in his D zone. When he gets the puck, he's gone. Every scrum, he's in the mix. He's playing fantastic hockey. He's their best player in my eyes. Mitch Marner, still fairly invisible. Not the player he was in the regular season. Willie Nylander doing what Willie does in the playoffs. Like, he picks it up, scores 2 goals, plays great, shifty with the puck, really artistic and creative, playing fantastic. But it's Max Domi for me. Him and Matthew Nyes and those guys, the Tyler Bertuzzi's, you're starting to see what Brad Treveling had in mind when they brought them in. Like, they're playing really solid hockey. So good for them. They're picking it up. And let me just leave this here. The last time the Bruins lost, not the last time the Bruins lost in game 7, but Bruins lost in game 7 in 2022 to the Carolina Hurricanes. Who was their killer in that game? Max Domi. 2 goals, 1 assist for the Carolina Hurricanes. Is history repeating itself? Maybe. But history could also be repeating itself in the sense 2013, 2018, 2024. Identical series, identical win-loss records. Identical wins in all 3 of those series. The winning team was Boston, Toronto, Boston, Boston, Toronto, Toronto. Game 7 went to Boston. So could it be history repeating itself? Potentially. Boston has been in the shoes. Most of the players for the Bruins in 2013 weren't even on the team. Some of them weren't even born. 2018, some guys were in that series. Boston, Marchand, McAvoy, they were in that series. So they know. The same thing goes for the Leafs. I don't know. Game 7, you throw everything out the window. The prior 6 games don't mean anything. It's a clean slate. We're going into Boston. If anything, I don't mind Boston's chances. Jeremy Swayman gives them a reason to win. All they have to do is play okay, Tim. That's all they have to do. Both goals were not Swayman's fault. The first one, Charlie McAvoy, I know Henrik Lundqvist said this on TNT between periods or after the game or whatever, and I said the same thing. You got to block that shot if you're Charlie McAvoy. Or just get out of the way. It's a terrible mistake by a really good defenseman. I don't know what he's thinking there. It's not even a hard shot by Willie Nylander. It's almost an afterthought. He's being hemmed in at the blue line, and he just throws it at the net, and it goes off McAvoy behind Jeremy Swayman. So not good. But the Bruins, Tim, you're right. They're gaining this reputation of choke artists. They are 0-6 now in their last six elimination attempts. I blame Patrice Bergeron.
Well, it's not just the reputation of based on their losing. It's how they're losing.
Yeah.
Remember how frustrating last year was? Those games 5, 6, 7 against Florida was just the effort wasn't there. The turnovers in their own zone, skating straight into the defenseman, going back the other way. Like they just couldn't do the basic things. And there were a lot of like, you know, Friday morning quarterback you could do last night to based on certain calls by the refs, certain calls that plays that we should have made. I'm talking about Geeky to Charlie Coyle. I don't know if you saw that one where he had him in the back door. He didn't make the play. There were a lot of plays like that that could have gone one way or another. And we scored technically with 0.1 seconds left. So yeah. I guess it technically was a 2-1 game. But there's just so much that's frustrating about this. And Pasternak's a big one for me. And I was thinking about this last night because I had trouble falling asleep, believe it or not. And when we talk about like the guys that don't show up for the playoffs, when we talk about the Marners and the Matthews of the world, we describe it as if it's not just that they played poorly, it's that they're the type of people, the type of players who don't show up for the playoffs. Because all players are going to have stretches like that. Crosby did that. He has playoffs where he didn't play his best performance. But when Pasta does it, it's like, oh, he's had a bad series. He needs to step up. At some point, we need to have a conversation about the fact that he's the type of player that doesn't elevate his game when it matters most. The same way he did with Marner and Matthews.
Ooh.
I don't know if we're quite there yet. But we might be on Monday morning because you've seen those takeover games from Matthews and Marchand, and you've seen elements of it from Tavares and Marner even, but you haven't seen that yet from Pasternak. I like that the Montgomery called him out, but this is the type of thing when I mean, who are you as a team? Who are you as a player? And what's this era of Bruins hockey? Because if you lose this, it's absolute humiliation, and they'll deserve it.
Yeah, and well-deserved. And arguably, Toronto is the better team going into the series. They have more talent. But the big question for me, not a big question, but it is a question. What do they do with Auston Matthews, the Toronto Maple Leafs? You've won the last two games. You've been the best team, and you've been the best team because you've outworked the Boston Bruins. I know Joseph Woll came in, and he's played really good. He's saved the pucks he has to save. I don't think he's had many lights out, you know, five bell saves. He's been a solid goaltender. The reason you've won is you've played good hockey. Solid, you know. Good defense, blocking shots, 200-foot game. And I'm not saying Auston Matthews doesn't play that type of game, but in the first four games, they were questioning how the Leafs were playing. What if Matthews comes in tomorrow and he skates and he feels pretty good? Do you play him at 80%? You have to, right? Or do you bench him and say, we're rolling pretty good, Auston? If you're Sheldon Keefe, you don't want to play Auston Matthews. You don't. But what if he says I'm healthy? What do you do, Tim?
Well, I'm not going to be the guy that says they're a better team without Auston Matthews just because of the last two games. But I think there's something that psychologically happens to a player, especially the depth players, but the ones that we're talking about, the Domis, Bertuzzi's, Nyes, even Robertson has been excellent in the series. That when your best player is out, something happens in your brain. Okay, I'm going to be the one to step up. We're going to play a different game than we would if Matthews was in the lineup because we have to win in a different way. And it comes out in the little things. It's that extra play. It's that extra block shot. It's the extra like, okay, we're going to have to win in a scrappy game because we're probably not putting 4 or 5 up on the board because our best goal scorer is out of the lineup. And so when he comes back in, it sort of takes some of that pressure off where, okay, Matthews is in. He's the guy. I can go back to my game. And that's how they lose. And so I think if he's in, to your point, you can't not play him if he's ready, if he's healthy, but I don't think it matters. I think they can beat you with Matthews or without you. They've proven it at this point. I don't think it's going to be a huge factor either way. I'm not super confident about game 7, and I'm not even the fact of whether or not Matthews will play is not very high on my list of storylines heading into game 7.
Wow. It's amazing to see you just shift, just completely just abandoning the Bruins.
I'm not abandoning them. It's just
sounds like you are.
No, I'm not. I'm not jumping ship. I'm calling them out.
Oh,
it's embarrassing. It's unacceptable.
What do they need to do to win game 7, the Boston Bruins?
I think one thing is for sure that this is where there's not a whole lot you can blame Montgomery for, but I think he's jumbled the lines a little bit too much in the last few games. I think you go with your regular season lineup and your best lines. That's probably something like DeBrusque, between Zaka, Pasternak, and then Coyle with Marchand, and probably Danton Heinen. You can flip Heinen and DeBrusque. They've both been in those roles. But that's been your top six for most of the second half of the season and a good chunk of this playoffs. Like, I don't think you need to mess with that. They tried moving Frederick up there and Geeky and all these other guys. It's just not working.
Einan's injured, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, is he injured?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Geeky was in the top six last night. I think you just don't mess with the lineup too much. Grizzlick might have played his last game for the Bruins after being beaten by Tavares in game five on the wing, which I don't totally blame him for, but he was scratched last night in favor of Shattenkirk. I don't know. Defensively, you were good last night. You know what I mean? Like, I'm okay rolling out the defense. I'm not looking at the bottom six. I'm not looking at, like, the 4 or 5 defensemen. I'm looking at the top guys. What do you need to do to get Marchand going and Pastrnak going? It was even the first power play of the game. They didn't have Pastrnak on it. They had power play one, everyone else, but it was Geeky instead of Pastrnak. It's just that's the coach overthinking things. You need to put it in the hands of the players, and they need to step up. It's the margin of error is too thin.
Yeah, Montgomery said it. He said it in his post-game presser. Pasta needs to step up. He's not playing good. He's been basically invisible in games 5 and 6, so no points, no anything. So he needs to do something. And they need to start. Their starts have been awful. The last two games, they've been outshot 23-3 in the first period. 23-3, Tim.
So now the Leafs have lost 5 straight game 7s. The Bruins have lost 6 straight elimination games. One of these are both horrible, awful runs by both of these teams. One of them is going to break on Saturday. And one of these is going to be just, it's going to be ugly for one of these cities.
Who do you have? Who do you think?
I think Toronto's going to win.
Unbelievable. You are such a terrible fan. Unbelievable.
I'm not a fan.
I love the unbiased nature of your thinking.
What has Boston given you in the last 72 hours that makes you think they're going to win game 7?
I like Swayman. I think Swayman's the X factor. I think he comes in and he rips out a shutout. I think Boston will win.
I think he's, in my lifetime, I don't think I've ever been more confident in a goalie making the save than I am in Swayman right now.
So good.
Yeah.
Breakaway goal by Nylander. Not many goalies on earth are saving that shot. That was a great move. And then obviously they'd ricochet off McAvoy. No one's saving that either. So what they need to do is test Joseph Woll earlier.
Yeah,
he gets comfortable. It's too easy for him right now. The Leafs are blocking. They're clearing second chance shots. They need to just do what they do best. Do what the Florida Panthers do. Throw everything at the net, traffic, get some greasy goals. That's how you're going to win this game. They're trying to out Toronto. They're trying to do, you know, backdoor passes. They're trying to do too much. That's not who you are. You have to play like the Boston Bruins. Throw the puck at the net. Get JVR in front of the net. Get one off his ankle, off his calf. That's how you're going to win this game. Throw everything at the net. I think Boston will pull it out. At home, game 7, it's going to be a good game. Very good. Hockey Night in Canada, Saturday night. What more can you ask for? This is what we wanted. This is how we thought this series was going to go before the playoffs started. Game 7. Very fun to watch. Very fun to be around. Very fun to talk about. How like bitter do you think Austin Matthews is sitting out game 5 and 6? It's just like, come on. What? Because players think about that. Like, this is a real thing. He is obviously happy that they're winning, but he's got to feel, you know, mixed emotions about the whole thing. Because you want the team to need you. You want to feel wanted. And then they go out and play great hockey, win 2 games, and you're still sitting there, tummy hurts. He's like, oh, man, what's going on?
Well, my DMs and mentions were kind of blowing up after the loss last night. And they probably will even more if we lose on Saturday. But someone said it's setting up for Matthews to come back and be the hero in game 7.
I don't think that makes sense.
You have all the momentum going back to Toronto, in Toronto's favor, I mean. Then you get your best goal player back.
And then if he comes back and scores, I don't think he's the hero, I think. Or is it like a Steven Stamkos type thing? Or he's back. He's going to score first shift. And yeah, baby. Or he could come back and just be the ass, you know?
Or he scores the game winner. Although, if he comes back and Toronto loses, you better be as harsh on him as you were on Bergeron.
Well, he's the new Bergeron. Yeah. That's his title now moving forward.
Yeah.
Him and Bergeron going down as the most selfish players in hockey history, some would say. Some hockey theologians already think that. Myself being one of them. All right, moving on. We had a series finish also, Tim, the other night. It was the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers. I'm disappointed by the LA Kings. I really am. I know the Edmonton Oilers were really, really, you know, what's the word?
Good?
No, they were the favorites, whatever. They were the favorites going into the series. Everybody thought they were going to win, and they did, rightfully so. I thought the Kings were going to put up more of a fight. I was expecting game six, game seven, closer games, overtime games. It just didn't come to fruition. Edmonton just worked these guys every single game. It was, I know LA pulled out one, but for the most part, it was just a clinic on how good the Edmonton Oilers were. And it wasn't just McDavid. It wasn't just Draisaitl. It was everybody stepping up for the Edmonton Oilers. It was Stuart Skinner stealing one game, playing fantastic, getting the shutout. The D-men played really good. Top to bottom, Holloway, Corey Perry, all these guys played fantastic hockey. And obviously the two, you know, two-headed beasts they have up top did what they are supposed to be doing. And it was disappointing. You know what I mean? And then it, you know, Edmonton's good. But after the series, as, you know, a prognosticator, as an analytical guy like I am, I just think about everything. My brain doesn't stop moving. What does the LA Kings have to do to move forward? Because I thought they were doing good things last year. They weren't mortgaging their future at the deadline, trying to, you know, make a go at the playoffs, even though they were a wild card team. They were going to make steps this offseason. And they do this silly Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. And that threw me for a loop. You're trading away a draft pick, Vilardi, Iafallo, good players to get Pierre-Luc Dubois, who has a very, very questionable history with effort, with being able to be coached, and just his attitude in general. You bring this guy in into a team that is a very solid culture, a very rock solid locker room, right? And then you jeopardize all that by bringing this guy in, who in my eyes wasn't even the best player in the trade. And early results are just awful. This guy, non-existent, Tim, in this series, really non-existent in the whole season. So if I'm Rob Blake, I'm kicking myself right now. Because you just ruined a one season and then getting rid of two really good players. And that's what I take away out of this for the LA Kings. You ruined a year from Kopitar, a year from Doughty, because those guys are getting old. Like, this is it. Your window is very, 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 very slim, if not shut. I think they could have had one good run this year, and they did. They blew it. Absolutely blew it. So this was a very big disappointment for me this series. And I blame Pierre-Luc Dubois. Five games, he had one goal. The more drastic stats are four shots on net. The whole series, Tim. Five games, four shots on net. That's bad.
His one goal was in game one, and he had three shots on net. Game two, no points, but one shot on net. Games three, four, five, zeros across the board, except for the one night that he had 14 penalty minutes. It's just embarrassing. And speaking of the Kings, like I even said, you know, this the last few years in these prior matchups, they were missing Doughty 2 years ago. They were missing either Kempe or Fiala last year, like one of their top players. This is the first year they had a healthy lineup. And they lost to Edmonton in six last year. And since then, they changed everything. Their offseason, new coach. They change up the goalies. The young players are taking a step forward. They bring in Dubois. Like they make all these changes, defense, goaltending, everything. And then they lose in five. You know, it's just like, and I understand that, like Colorado, Edmonton's a juggernaut. And a lot of this has more to do with how good they are than anything that LA did wrong, similar to Winnipeg. But this is disappointing any way you slice it. And because of the Dubois thing, there's very little room to maneuver. There's very little hope for like, okay, if XYZ happens next year, we bounce right back. You're going to have a good team. Who are you beating in the first round? You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
You're not the best thing you could hope for is maybe squeezing into like the second in the division and hoping that you play a terrible wild card team. That's the best case scenario. Most likely you're going to play Edmonton or Dallas or Vegas and Colorado, and you're going to lose in the first round again.
Yeah, we can talk about this in the offseason, but I don't, man, that's the thing at the end of the day. I don't mind the pieces that they have. It's the Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like I like Kevin Fiala. I think he's really, really good. Adrian Kempe is one of the most underrated goal scorers in the NHL right now. Philip Deneau is fantastic. Kopitar, it's just the age of these guys, and they're missing that one piece. Quentin Byfield, very good. Like really, he took massive leaps forward this year. So I think the pieces are there. Maybe a new goaltender, Cam Talbot, long in the tooth a little bit. But I'm not giving up on this LA King team just yet. But I think they really blew it with that Dubois trade. And that cost them the series. They needed another guy who could, you know, put pucks in the net, be good defensively, and he wasn't the guy. Now he's there for four more years at 8.5. So it's tough. It's tough for the LA Kings, but the Oilers were a good team. Let's talk about the Oilers. We talked about the bad. Let's talk about the good. Leon Draisaitl, 5 games, 5 goals, 5 assists, 10 points. That's 2 points per game. That's a goal and assist per game. He was fantastic. The last 3 years, how has he done against the Kings, Tim?
He's played the Kings 18 times in the playoffs over the last 3 years. He has 17 goals. Which
might
is just,
want to watch that guy.
It's a stupid number, yeah. And he said, and this, I love this quote, and this is what I'm part of my frustration with, like, Pasternak's of the world. He said, quote, "It's always been a goal of mine to be a big game player, and for the most part, I think I've done that. The best players, it's not just talent. They want the spotlight. They want to rise to the occasion when it matters most. Draisaitl's done it. And I know, he hasn't won a cup. He only went to the conference finals once. Like, he's got a lot to prove, but there's only so much that one player can do. And I think most of the time in the last few years, you can't blame Draisaitl and McDavid and those guys for not doing everything they can for their team. He was excellent. Hyman was excellent. McDavid, relatively quiet from a goal scoring perspective, but still put up a bunch of points.
Well, here's my issue. Do we have a problem with Connor McDavid? Because when you look at the Oilers and you look at how they've done this postseason, yeah, some guys are putting up really big points. Leon Draisaitl scoring a lot of goals. Zach Hyman has 7 goals. Thankfully, he's you know, carrying the weight for the Edmonton Oilers. But when you look at Connor McDavid, is it cause for concern, Tim? He's got 1 goal in 5 games, and it was a power play goal. So 5-on-5, he's been just done nothing. So if I'm an Oilers fan, I'm a little worried. The best player on the planet not showing up. Like, just not, yeah, he's doing his thing where he skates around really fast and he looks like he's doing a lot, but he's really doing nothing. I'm serious. This has me worried, because you need him to score goals. You need him to be productive. And right now, if I'm looking down the bench and I need to score a goal, I can't put him on the ice. I can't get him out there. I need to put guys out there who I know are going to produce. And even coming into the playoffs, I think the last 3 or 4 games, he didn't score either. Is it Adam Henrique's fault? I don't know. But if I'm putting out a line there at the end of the game, I'm going to Nuge, Draisaitl, Hyman, probably Evander Kane. Maybe Dylan Holloway. He's been scoring goals. Maybe Warren Fogel. Connor McDavid needs to do some inflection. Figure out what he's doing, because it's not working. Yeah, he's got assists. He's got 11 assists. A lot of those assists are second assists. A lot of them are just coming off a bank pass, giving it to somebody else. It's not even the primary assist. So for all the accolades the Edmonton Oilers are getting, yeah, you beat the LA Kings, this and that. Red flags, Tim. Connor McDavid. I'm worried about him. Something must be wrong, because he's 1 goal in 5 games, and it was a power play goal. So that to me, keep an eye on him, because something's going on with Connor McDavid. Mark my word.
Yeah, this is a good example of why people listening need to watch on YouTube as well and see the smirks. I mean, yeah, McDavid only has 1 goal, but it's not like he leads the league in points in the playoffs, right?
A lot of terrible assists.
Sure. But it's not like he just beat his team in 5 games and has 12 points in 5 games.
It's not his team anymore. It's Draisaitl's team.
Okay. If that's how you feel, John. We still don't have any matchups in the West yet, though. Vancouver and Nashville are still going, and Dallas and Vegas still going. So we don't know who's playing who yet.
Well, before we get into that, I want to talk about Wendy's. This episode is brought to you by Wendy's. It takes hard work and determination to bring home the cup. Luckily, all you need to do to bring home a cup is join Wendy's Rewards and then just eat. That's it. You don't even have to play in the NHL, which is beautiful. So to do that, just download the Wendy's app, place your favorite order, and you'll be well on the road to victory. And hey, by victory, we mean free food, obviously. Everybody loves free food. So download the app, play the games, get some free food. It's good. And while you're racking up rewards points and eating your way through the menu, you'll also find plenty of deals along to keep the morale high, because you know you get really sad sometimes. So that'll keep you happy. What are you waiting for? Download the Wendy's app today and start earning on every order. Everything has an app these days. It's kind of neat.
We should make an app.
Oh, I don't even want a website. But you can be driving. And like, I'm hungry, and I do this a lot with the kids and the family. We're like driving somewhere. It's like, oh, we need to stop and get food for lunch. And you got to plan on the road half an hour ahead. What do? You just jump on the app, download it, up we go. So now we can do it with Wendy's when we're on the road. The kids like Wendy's. They really do. Get the nuggets, get the fries. What we do is we hack the menu. Instead of getting individual kids meals, I just get like a 40 piece nuggets. And then we just throw them in the back seat and they're like animals. We don't even like put them on wrappers. We just like, boom, like a grenade goes off and they just scavenge for them. They're absolute animals. All right, moving on. The Winnipeg Jets got beaten out. Everybody knows a lackluster playoffs for them. Probably one of the biggest choke jobs I've ever seen. They lost to the Colorado Avalanche. Brendan Dillon, my former teammate, kind of frustrated, Tim. What's he so frustrated about?
Yeah, he's frustrated that he hasn't been offered a contract extension. And it's weird that you see a player say so outright to the media, especially, you know, it's not like it's approaching July 1st and he doesn't have a deal yet or whatever. Like, it's just only been a couple of days. But he wants to be in Winnipeg, which I think is interesting. And, you know, I'm glad that he wants to be there. I'm sure his kids and his wife and his family are all very much entrenched there. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting that he is frustrated by that.
Well, it's so funny. It's like, he's like, I really want to be here. You know, I've been trying to talk to you guys all year. I want to negotiate a new deal. Chevy's like, yeah, I know. There's a reason, you know, we're not doing that. Can you not, you know, make this a big deal? It's like the jilted lover. I love you so much. I keep calling you. Why aren't you answering my calls? I want to be here. I want, you know, I want to change. Let's do this. And the other one's like, there's a, you know, read the tea leaves, bro. There's a reason we're not answering the calls. There's a reason we're not, you know, negotiating. You're 33 years old. You have an injury history. You make $4 million. We want to try to find a different type of defenseman. We have Logan Stanley. We have a big D-man who hits. We're going to move on. Let's not make this weird. Don't make it weird, Brendan. Like, just move on. Like, but I want to be here. I love you so much. Just leave, okay? Like, don't make a scene. And he's making a scene right now. So it's frustrating for Brendan. I played with Dilly. I know him. But the Jets have to do something different. You know, you have to change. And obviously he's not going to fit in their plan. So it's just funny that he's causing a big stink. And the back end is where they will make a change. They have Morrissey and Schmidt and Pionk, good defensemen. They have to revamp a little bit. It's time to, you know, change things out. Trade Connor Hellebuck. Dumb signing. He's there for 8 more years. Sorry. What else, Tim?
Yeah, there's some weird rumors about Rod Brind'Amour possibly being approached by other teams. Some of them was Seattle because of his relationship with the president there. But Dreger basically put it all to rest yesterday, said that the Carolina Hurricanes are not interested in allowing their coach to investigate the open market. No surprise there. I'm surprised it was even a rumor in the first place. And that yesterday, in the past 24 hours or so, the two sides have come together looking like an extension is coming and he should stay in Carolina, but worth paying attention to.
That screams of his agent just leaking something to a reporter and saying, hey, we, you know, do us a favor, write an article. We got to get a deal done. And they're not negotiating kind of the way we want them to. So that's what that screams about. And that does happen. Being in the, you know, media side of things with NBC, you do hear of, you know, certain reporters having certain relationships with certain GMs. They scratch our back, we scratch theirs. And so that's where this anonymous informant comes from. We'll give you a little bit of information. You talk to the players, you let us know if players are unhappy, this, that, and the other. So it's there is an avenue for information to be had, even though it's not legal, technically. Reporters talk to players. Just say I was, you know, doing a story on Minnesota Wild. And I'm talking to Zuccarello or Kaprizov, and he's like, I hate it here. You know, I don't like it. It sucks. I take that information, go and tell another GM. He, in turn, can call Minnesota GM and negotiate a deal. That works for all kinds of stuff. So that's just how it works. So anyways, it all, and I'm sure that's what happened with Rod Brind'Amour's agent. He wanted the deal. The agent said, well, I'm going to go talk to a reporter, tell him an anonymous source. He won't reveal it, but it's me. He writes a story, Carolina Hurricanes read it, and they go, no, we got to put out the fire. He's our coach. He's a great coach. We want to keep him here, so we're going to start negotiating. So it just expedites the process, gets everything moving, and everybody knows what happens. Like the GM for Carolina, Waddell knows what happens because only two people know. It's Brind'Amour and Waddell. And all of a sudden, there's a story written about it. It's like, come on. Like, that's how it works. Rod just putting the pressure on the Carolina Hurricanes to get a deal done. He is a great coach. All right, moving on. Jordan Eberle, speaking of the Seattle Kraken, refuted Emily Kaplan's report. Emily Kaplan, very well-known ESPN reporter, very highly held, esteemed, like just doesn't just throw stuff out there like I do. Jordan Eberle refuted a story about significant crack in players turning on Haskell and, you know, forcing the GM to fire David Haskell. Jordan Eberle says, by no means did anybody go in with an ultimatum. That's not how our team operates. It probably happened. He didn't deny it. We didn't go in with an ultimatum, but we went in with our opinions and we let them know how we felt. And we felt that maybe the coach wasn't right for us. So it's a play on words. Did you catch that, Tim?
Yeah, he even said he was disappointed in the report. But again, you're not denying it. You're not happy that it got out, but you obviously went into the locker room and into the coach's room and said, you know, what you wanted to say. So I think you're right. He didn't deny it.
Emily Kaplan, she's not going to make stuff up. All right, moving on. Two games tonight. Two huge games, crucial games. I love it. Dallas-Vegas, game six in Vegas. Vegas facing elimination. Bruce Cassidy calling out his leader, Alex Pietrangelo, saying he's a veteran guy. He's got to be better, and he should know better. He took a terrible penalty on Tyler Seguin in game five. Cost them the game. Dallas goes on the power play, scores the eventual game winner. Can't happen to that. Cassidy continued. He said, there's controlled aggression out there all over the ice in every series. There's a little bit of a learning curve that goes into that. We should know better, but it happens. Margins are too thin. Learning curve? The guy's been in the playoffs every year for the last like 5 years. He's a vet. Won a Stanley Cup with St. Louis. Won a Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights. Learning curve? Like, I don't know about that. I just think he has to be smarter about things. He said, Bruce Cassidy said, to cap it off, we have to take care of our discipline. We just have to. It's that simple. That's it. It's very simple, Tim. You know, be disciplined. You should think about that.
Tim, you need to grow up.
You really do need to grow up.
Who do you like for that game tonight?
Oh, boy, you're putting me on the spot here. I got a lot of Vegas Golden Knights. I think they can't lose four in a row, can they? Who do you start in
that? But I don't think they're going
to.
No.
You go to Thompson or do you go to Aiden Hill?
That's a good question.
Back to Logan Thompson, probably.
Yeah, I would think so.
He got you the two wins, but he also got you two losses. Aiden Hill. Their goalies haven't played terrible. That's a thing. It hasn't been the goalie's fault. So we'll see I want both to win because, you know, you got Pavelski and friend of the show, Matt Duchene, but then the Vegas Golden Knights I picked. So I'm winning either way. That's the way I look at it.
We're losing either way.
No. See, that's the way you think. You're a loser. I'm a winner. And I think I'm going to win always. So moving on to the next game, Vancouver-Nashville. Vancouver up 3-2 playing game six in Nashville. No one thought it was get this far, but Thatcher Demko gets injured. Nashville playing really solid. JT Miller doing what a good leader does. Day before the game, pregame, just a random practice. He throws on the goaltender Artur Silvos' dress shirt. Did you see this?
Silvos. Yeah, it was great. It was great. Did you like that?
What a shirt he was wearing. Well, could you think you could pull that off?
I don't think anyone could pull that off except for maybe JT Miller.
It's a very flamboyant shirt, but is Silvos Russian?
Probably. Yeah, it's different
it's
over
a,
there.
It's different a Russian fashion. Shirt. It's a different culture. So JT Miller doing what he does, he throws it on over his pads, wrecks the shirt, and does the practice in it. It's a fantastic move. Not many guys would do this. JT Miller does it. It's, you know, loosens up the team. They lost last game. Everybody's, you know, gripping the stick a little tighter. That's what you need. You need to loosen up the atmosphere. It's just a game, everybody. We're fine. We're up 3-2. Let's go. Let's have some fun. They'll go out, and I think they'll close out the Nashville Predators tonight. And it's all because of JT Miller wearing that shirt. What a leader. You know what, Finn? What if Pasta would? If you had Miller over Pasta, would you do that trade?
No.
Oh.
No.
I would.
JT Miller. Pasta's a 60-goal scorer. You know what I mean? Like, it's – what does Miller won?
What does Pasta won?
Exactly. Why make the deal?
Because Miller wears dress shirts for practice.
That's a good point. You make a good argument. All right, I'll take Miller.
All right. Well, I guess we'll close out the show on that. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you Monday, Tim. If somehow the Bruins lose, are we going to see you Monday?
Here, like I said, this is not disappointing in the sense of like, man, we had a chance at a real run here, and we blew it in the first round like last year. this team is not going to go on a deep run. You might win one game against Florida if you advance.
Listen to you. You're so defeatist. They won the Eastern Conference.
John, they're not that team.
Wow.
So, yeah, I will be here on Monday either way, but you're going to see two extremes one way or the other.
They didn't win the Eastern Conference. I stand corrected.
No.
They were fourth in the East behind Carolina Rangers and the Panthers. All right. Well, we'll see, I guess. Good luck, everybody. Just pray for Tim. He needs it. And then have a good night watching all these great hockey games. We'll talk to everybody on Monday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.